you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
All right, before we begin the show, let's talk about Viking Strength. Viking Strength makes high-altitude training masks that give you all the benefits of working out in the cold without ever having to leave the gym. Many top athletes train in cold environments to outlast their competition and improve their mental toughness, but most people don't have the time or the energy to train in the cold. So Viking Strength, well, it's bringing the mountain to you. Their training masks are lightweight, making them easy to wear while sparring or jogging, and you can easily adjust the level of resistance. Thrive outside of your comfort zone and improve your mental focus with Viking Strength. Check them out by clicking the link in this episode description or by searching Viking Strength Training Mask on Amazon. Also, use the code BYMViking10 to get 10% off your order. Check them out, Viking Strength, and use the code BYMViking10 for 10% off. All right, let's start the show.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
And we're back for another episode. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Hopefully everyone survived the holidays. Nobody's too fat. Nobody killed themselves or killed their families. What's going on, buddy? How was your holiday? You look happier. You look there's color in your face. There's an energy that you have. I don't know. There's some pep in your step, as they say. You seem very happy today.
Jeez Louise, Lewis. Wow. I mean, I haven't done anything to warrant such a nice welcoming intro. I mean, I did my usual, not picking up the phone, ignoring your phone calls. I do have a little color in my cheek. I'm done with the pills. The pills are gone. They're done. They're out of my life. Okay. I'm back working out. Me and Callum was back for Thanksgiving. We went to the gym. We worked out. That got the wheels in motion. So I'm back. I'm back working out twice a day, feeling good. Thanksgiving was a success. Of course, that isn't over yet, though. Now it's Black Friday. No, what is it? Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Robot Tuesday. I mean, it never fucking ends. It never ends, Lewis.
Yeah, I know. It does. As I'm an adult, it never became as apparent how, I mean, whatever. I'm not one of these people where I'm like, oh my God, screw big businesses. It's like, but it is kind of sickening that this season, They take advantage of sort of the warm feelings that you have. Like, I'm thinking about my son and my family and my aunt and my sister, and, you know, and then they go, cool, strike while the iron's hot. These guys are emotional. They're nostalgic. They're thinking about growing up. Now's when they're going to spend the most. So let's take advantage. And it's just sort of sickening. So I've actually avoided any Black Friday or Cyber Monday shopping out of protest.
Okay, out of protest. Well, the only one that you're going to, the only person that's going to suffer is you, because you're going to pay full price for the items. I did go to Best Buy yesterday and treated myself to a new TV. Been needing that for a while. Got myself a nice new TV. But I am puzzled. I mean, I think we had this conversation last year, but I'll say it again. I am fucking puzzled. When I'm on the TV, like Friday, right? I'm sat at home, and all it was on the news was that, you know, local news reporters going to there's a mall near LA, like an outlet mall called the Citadel, right? And it just went there, and they were covering everybody outside, waiting in line. You know, some of them had been there from 5 a.m. in the freezing cold, and all they're doing, they're just buying last season's shitty goods at a slightly reduced price. I'm sorry, waiting in line for 4 or 5 hours to save $20 off a pair of shitty trousers or a t-shirt is not worth it to me. I'm sorry. Especially when you can sit on your couch and do it from your phone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's no need to do it. Please explain to me why these people brave these long queues.
Well, I think, I don't really, there's probably an answer to that. I'm assuming on Friday, if you go there in person, you're going to save way more money than on Cyber Monday. Otherwise, there's no reason to. I just don't like crowds. I mean, I like to shop when I'm in person, like my assistant. asked me this morning. She's like, it's Cyber Monday. Do you want me to go shopping for your family online and get gifts now? And I was like, well, number one, I want to shop for my family. I don't want some fucking random chick picking out gifts. And number two, I want to be inspired. I want to go to Target in the kids section and the toy section and see, you know, see stuff that my niece would get excited about and, like, you know, just be there and in the moment. And, you know, I'm going to probably get stuff that I would never have in a million years seen if I was just shopping online, because you're very specific online. But I also, you know what I'm getting my family this year for Christmas?
It's pretty good. Go ahead. The gift, the gift of humor, the gift of love, the gift of Luis J. Gomez. What are you giving them, Luis?
I am renting a villa in Jamaica for my sister, my son's mother, my niece. It's my favorite thing in the world to do. We're going in February.
Stop. I need to see the books on BYM. What is going on? The guy's over there. He's got, I mean, I'm sure those shooting glasses that you've got on now, they're a designer brand. When the gag first started, they were shitty $2.99 from the fucking CVS. Now he's got Louis Vuitton glasses on. He's got a beautiful white t-shirt. I guarantee that's Dior or something. You've got your assistant. You're holidaying for the family in a villa in Jamaica. We need to open the books, baby boy, because shit, something's going on. I'm being fiddled. I am being fiddled very, very fast by an asshole, Luis J. Gomez. What is going on?
What's funny is it does sound great. This is why, like, I sound like the man, because, like, I'm renting a villa for my whole family, but I'm kind of being cheap. When I really break it down, it's not that expensive to rent the villa, okay? I'm just paying for the villa and the food. They got to pay for their own flights to get down there. When it's all said and done, I also get a vacation. I would rent this villa just for myself. So it's sort of me being a scumbag, and I'm just bringing them along on the trip.
I feel like it's going to affect your Christmas. I feel like you'd have a better Christmas in New York City.
No, I'll be in New York.
I'll be in New York. Okay.
I'm buying it for Christmas for mid-February, which is the best time to get out of the weather.
Oh, hold on a minute. So you're getting everybody a gift that they can enjoy in mid-February. So basically, you're not getting them a gift to enjoy on Christmas Day. And you're flying yourself to Jamaica in mid-February to a villa. And you're saying, hey, guys, if you want to come with me, you can book yourself a flight ticket. You can get your own travel insurance, bring all your own spending money. You know, but you can join me. Basically, that's your gift. You're allowing your family to spend time with you after Christmas in February.
Yeah, because I need to make it clear, because you're making it sound like I'm Mr. Fucking Moneybags over here. I'm not Michael Bisping bringing the whole family and then some to Maui. Like, everybody. Oh, my God. The list of 30 people that Michael Bisping brought to Maui. Holy shit. Man, no. I'm renting a villa. $2,400 later, I've taken care of my whole family for Christmas. I get to look like the fucking man, and I get to go to Jamaica.
I actually had, what's the word I'm looking for? An epiphany, if you will, of sorts this morning. Christmas present. I don't want a Christmas present this year. I do not want a present at all. I'm going to tell Rebecca. I'm going to tell the kids. Take the money you would spend on my gift and give it to charity, or buy a kid a gift from a house that is underprivileged. I was watching something this morning. You called and I never picked up. I didn't do my usual ignore it because you're just going to ramble at me. I was actually in tears. I was watching this thing on Twitter, and it was a TV show, Dispatches, in England. And it focused on these underprivileged children in this house that, you know, they're struggling for money and things like that. And they got no money for Christmas presents and things like that. And it just broke my heart. And I thought, here we are all over the world spending far too much, spending money to excess. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, this is sad. It is.
Let's watch
it. Broke my fucking heart. All right, take a look, baby boy. Take a look.
Christmas is going to be tight.
Empty fridge.
This is my house growing up. And he doesn't feel bad for me. He mocks me for my upbringing. Now imagine you grow up like this and then your mom crashes the car on Christmas Eve.
Sucks to be you. Hey, you know, Courtney lives with her mom. I mean, this is just so sad. They're scraping up little bits of money. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, they got a roof over their heads. That's the main thing, because I know a lot of people don't, right? And it goes on. Last night was cold. They can't afford to put the heating on. If anybody can find me a way to make a donation to that family, let me know, because I'm doing it and it's coming their way. But yeah, so this Christmas, Lewis, I'm focusing on being a giving person. Giving to those that need it. You know, maybe I'll do a little toy drive. Maybe people from BYM, the listeners, can donate a toy. Okay, how about that? That's what I'm doing. But fine. You jet off to the sun, to the shine, to the villa. in first class. You do that, Lewis. You do that. But yeah, let's organize a thing where people can donate. But in the meantime, Scrooge McDuck over there is going to be fucking swimming in his gold coins.
You goddamn right. We can do it. We could do BYM toy drive. That would be kind of fun, right? I don't even know what a toy drive is, really. What is it? What do? They send us the toys. We send them out.
I have no idea. I was sitting there. I swear to God. I watched that and I thought, I do want to like try and help. But I'm like, how the fuck do I do that? And I'm like, it's the 1st of December almost, is it? It's the 2nd of December. Jesus Christ. I'm like, maybe a little foresight, maybe a little organization, maybe not just feeling sorry for myself on a Monday morning whilst I sit in my half mansion and it's too hot. In fact, can we turn the heat down? It's too hot in here and the dog walkers are taking the dogs. And I'm like, it's a little too noisy in here. Can the dog walkers use the side entrance or leave them down at the gatehouse, please? And as I'm sitting here sweating, I'm like, this is too much. We got to give back, Lewis. We've got to give back.
That family doesn't have any heat. You have too much heat. So if somehow you can give them some of your heat, maybe it'll work out. I don't know.
It's winter here and it's balmy. Right? My forehead, I'm sweating. And I'm not mocking this, by the way. I'm very serious about this. Oh, I've frozen up. I'm back. There I am. I'm back. But yeah, you enjoy your time in Jamaica, Lewis.
No idea what a toy drive is or how to start a toy drive, but I got to be honest with you. I think you're right when you say that I don't think that December 1st is enough time for us to organize a very well-thought-out toy drive. I feel like it's going to have an adverse effect. Guys, don't donate toys this year. Next year, though, 2020 Christmas, the BYM toy drive, we're going to make a lot of difference in people's lives. You wait and see.
Yeah, because I feel like it might be like, if you send me a ton of toys now, you send them to my house, and I'm like, I'm not that organized. I'm not going to send them out this year. The Bispings have got so many toys, you can't shake a shitty stick at them all. Do you know what I mean? It's like just toys everywhere. It's like, oh, yeah. I went balls out this year. Do you know what I mean? And meanwhile, people just send them to us. No, but do find the charity. Donate a toy to someone close by. And I won't go on about it because we're here to have fun. We're here to have a good time. But that did touch my heart, Lewis.
I've been doing that for a few years now. I've every year I tweet out that instead of getting me anything for my birthday or whatever, just donate to St. Jude's Hospital, which is the one charity of choice. I know it's a really reputable charity. It's children with cancer, which is like, I mean, Jesus Christ, if you don't want to help children with cancer, what the fuck's wrong with you? So yeah, I completely agree with you, Michael Bisping. And I'll tell you right now, I'll say the same thing. Michael Bisping, I will do the exact same thing. I will forego any gifts this year from anybody, not just my close family members. But if you guys are planning on doing anything this year, if you guys want to make a donation on behalf of BYM, Michael Bisping, Louis J. Gomez, that'd be awesome. If you guys, I really like St. Jude's, but if there's any other charity that's out there, that would be awesome. And we will try to do more and more things like that. Believe me and you, dude, when it comes to kids, as long as there's a fucking kid involved, a dog, I don't give a shit about. An old lady with fucking dementia, go fuck yourself. If you bring a kid to the table, you're going to really touch my heartstrings.
100%. And listen, whilst I feel for dogs and cats and hamsters and guinea pigs and gerbils, right, and snakes, so there's a lot of homeless fucking iguanas this year. Couldn't give a fuck, okay? Iguanas are supposed to be fucking homeless, okay? They live in the wild. Never seen a campaign for homeless iguanas, by the way. No, but you know, but you're absolutely right. You know, they have all these adverts on TV. They're like, oh, you know, think of these dogs this year. And it is sad. It is sad, but I would rather help our human being 100%. But let's get off the doom and gloom. What else is going on? So hold on before we move on. Staying on the Black Friday theme, as always, Lewis, every year we see it, you know, the rush to get into the stores, to get the 20% off or whatever it is. I mean, sometimes there is good deals, but more often than not, it results in a brawl, in a fight, in a nasty display of human emotion.
Yeah, I mean, we see it a lot, but does it more often than not? I don't know. I would like to have a little bit of faith in human beings. I would like to say that more often than
every year, I watch the news, I laugh at them, I go, ha, 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 look at these people waiting in line. And then sure enough, the next clip is the people brawling over some shit in Walmart. And it's always Walmart. No offense to the people that shop at Walmart, but you guys really love a sale.
Yeah, it's not a classy bunch. It's okay. I shop at Walmart. I'm not a classy guy, nor are you. We are you. We are those same exact people, so we're not judging you. Yeah, I mean, look, I think that it's nothing. You hear about this all the time. They'll be like, you know, in the hood, you hear it's like, yeah, this guy was murdered for $20. And it's like, well, no, he wasn't murdered for $20. he got into an altercation over $20, and then shit hit the fan, and things got out of control, and somebody got murdered because, you know, tempers were flaring principal. And somebody had a gun. Exactly.
It was principal. I don't give a fuck if it's $1,000 or 5 cents, okay? Motherfucker, bitch, but I have my money. Yes. Pow, 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 clap, clap, clap. Pow, 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 pow.
But that's what's happening.
That's what happened.
It's not like people give a fuck about the deal. They're fighting over, like, the last, you know, fucking $100 foodie fucking cooker. No, what happens is they grab it, somebody else bumps them, and they go, hey, motherfucker, don't bump me. And they go, no, fuck you, dude. And they're dealing with all the bullshit in their lives. They can't afford to be there. They're trying to save money. And then in that moment, they got a fucking News 7 camera there watching you, and you're brawling with some grandma. And you're like, I don't even know how I fucking got here.
Yeah, exactly. They're rolling around aisle 7. Clean up to aisle 7. And then when they get there, there's fucking two, like, guys rolling around on the floor, clutching, I don't know, what's the most ridiculous thing they could be fighting over, Lewis?
A dildo.
A breast pump. A reduced breast pump, okay? Yes. They've both got kids on the way. The wives are pregnant. They get me a breast pump. It's like, fucking Target are doing a killer on Black Friday, Cyber Monday, on the fucking breast pumps. They're down there. There's Bisping and Gomez arguing over a breast pump. In fact, I think we have some footage, not of a breast pump, but of
This is America, right? We're going to do a comparison. So America, we seem to be the problem here, because in other countries, they're a little more civil. This is maybe, what is the Target or something?
It looks like Target.
Yeah, they're opening the doors.
The red.
And, I mean,
look at them.
You see,
they're like fish that need to get into water.
Slowly but surely. But you see, look at the metal doors. They're starting to break. Like it's Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it's like Jurassic, but they're like the crazed look in their eyes, like, let me in. And look at the people. Look at the size of the line. Look at the stampede of people coming in. Wow, to Target. I just don't get it, man.
And
look at them.
They all look Puerto Rican. Not to be racist against my own people, but I mean, Jesus Christ. Come on, guys. Let's have a little.
For the audio only listeners, they're now being trampled on. This is a massive safety hazard. There appears to be hundreds of people filtering through a very small door. The corrugated iron doors are being rolled up, but not in time. And it is just an all-out madness, free-for-all. Absolute shocking display. Shocking display, Lewis. Shocking.
Shame. Shame on America. Shame on America during this holiday season. Fine, I'll take it.
I would like to say that we don't behave like that in England. Well, oh, this is Canada, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. Very cordial. A little clap. Is that after you, sir? High five to the security. Hello, peace to one and all. Look at that. That's how we do it in the Commonwealth, Lewis.
Are you taking credit for Canada?
Yes. There was they had an in-store photographer photographing the people's good behavior as they walked in. There was high fives. They were like, oh, we're doing a little segment down at the bottom. You can taste some wine or something like that. Oh, this, that sounds delightful. Maybe I'll pick some up along the way. But there's no pushing and shoving. The Commonwealth, we know how to do it. In fact, just before you said that, I was going to say Black Friday in England, we have fallen to the same standards. You do see it. Every week, people fighting in England as well. Same shit. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Is that so? Because you guys don't have Thanksgiving. So is it celebrated the same day or is there another day that they do Black Friday in England?
No, we've just copied it. We just copied it 100% because obviously, as you say, we don't have Thanksgiving, but we do like a sale. We are a nation that likes to shop, much like America. So they take on the sales, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, just as big these days in England,
I'm sure.
I believe.
I'm sure. Well, you got to figure like we're so connected now. The internet has like made it so like we are like, it's such a weird thing when you really think about it, even just like if you wanted to get like a letter to a celebrity back in the day, like, all right, let's say you were fighting in 1990 and somebody wanted to write you a letter or say, fuck you, Michael Bisping, fuck you. You know, you're a pussy. I hate you. In order to get that message to you, they would have to, I mean, write a letter to your management company, and then it would go there, and then they'd have to trust that your manager or your agent would somehow bring this horrible letter. It just isn't happening.
First of all, the first thing they would have to do, which is a very old school thing, is get a pen and a paper and then actually write a letter. Okay, when's the last time you wrote a letter, Lewis, physically?
Sometimes when I write, like my hands forget how to write letters. No.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, you know, if I'm doing a signing here and there, do you know what I mean? I start off with the signature, best wishes to blah, blah, blah. And then by the end, I don't recognize what I'm writing. It does not even look like my signature anymore. If anyone came up and said, Michael, is this real or is this fake? I said, that's you got ripped off there. So you'd have to write the letter. Then you'd have to, as you say, find the address, go down the mailbox, all the rest of it. These days, you want to send a message to anybody, anybody in the world, you can go to Instagram, message, boom, and it will go to them.
And
it'll
we
go
see
through
it.
If they choose to read it or not, I'm going to do it right now. Okay, message requests. Okay, what have we got? It's loading. Sometimes I get good ones.
You gotta, all right, let's play a game. You got to read your last message request no matter what it says. Get my phone out of the other room. It's plugged in.
Hold on. An actual message, because I've got a few people that just mentioned me. Okay. All right, I got one here. This was sent at 8:08 this morning.
Good. What does it say?
It says, I want to take the time to apologize for my comment on your recent picture. It was a family picture, and I shouldn't have made that comment. For many reasons, I won't be a coward and delete my comment, but once I saw that you saw it and you liked it, my stomach dropped. I wouldn't ever want someone making a negative comment towards my son like that. Please, plus, I know your son is a stud and could probably whip my ass. Again, I'm sorry and happy holidays. And that's from Frangione. Well, Frangione... Suck my dick, insulting my son.
What was the comment?
I don't know. But then he says, oh, I'm not going to be a coward and delete the comment. I'm going to leave my abusive comment towards my son online for the world to see. Frangione, if you're listening to this, I don't know what the comment is, but go find it and delete it, please. Lewis, you're up.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Frankie, just delete the comment, you asshole. You're saying you don't agree with the comment. It's more cowardly to leave something that you don't believe in than it is to just admit you're wrong and say, oh, I don't want to offend somebody. That's not who I am. Why would you leave something that's not a representation of you up? I get that a lot. It's actually, I give people credit because I post pictures of my son a lot. And sometimes, especially I had that Nicole Arbour thing where that girl was fucking being shitty to me. So her fans would like write a comment underneath my son, like be like, yeah, you're a piece of shit or whatever. And it'd be a picture of my kid. And I only had to say it a couple times, but I was like, hey dude, this is a picture of my kid. It's for his family. I don't delete comments. When people write shitty stuff to me, I never block them or delete them. I was like, but don't write it on pictures of my kid. Cause that's not really what it's for. And 99% of the time the people go, oh shit, sorry. They either delete it and then they move on to something else or whatever. So there is this weird unspoken rule of the game where people typically leave families out of it, or they try to anyway. So the latest one says, if I drag my girl to your Valentine's Day show in Indy, should I bring you a joint? Indy is not the easiest place to find smoke on the fly. At least they won't arrest you for it anymore. And I won't say the guy's name.
That's nice.
Because I think that'll probably get him arrested. But yeah.
That's great. That's really nice.
Hold on.
I had one here saying, yeah, the answer is yes. Bring me a joint. Maybe some crack cocaine as well.
Anything harder? ?
Anything harder, Jesus Christ. I got one here that says, bring back Shannon. By the way, big thanks to Shannon for joining us last time. And you know what, by the way, just quickly, and let's not spend too much time on this. I had a revelation. I feel like I had a revelation. I feel like I've been lied to by you and Shannon. I feel like Shannon said, I can't deal with Mike anymore and walked off the show. Not like, oh, her timing wouldn't allow it and we got to bring in Brian.
No. First of all, it wasn't a dealing with Mike anymore. It was not dealing with the inconsistency of the timing of the show. It's a challenge for Brian too. Brian's just fucking, I think also at the time Brian had less shows and Shannon was doing more shows. So that was what it was. Shannon loves doing the show. And to be honest with you, I'll give Shannon a monthly segment on the show. We can come in and do Shannon's top three topics once a month. And, I would love it. The fans loved Shannon.
Fuck him.
They did. The comments on YouTube, they were very thirsty, to use the expression that the kids are using these days. Last direct message, I got this one at 6 p.m. last night. How do you give yourself cauliflower ear and how fast does it pop up? I would be so happy if you could tell me. That's from Braden Gibson 77. Braden Gibson 77. Let me tell you don't want cauliflower ears. It hurts. You look silly and you will get comments for the rest of your life. Everywhere I go, people always mention the cauliflower ears all the time. But you know, some people do want it. I have seen videos on Instagram where people are purposely giving themselves cauliflower ears. They use like a water bottle and they put it underneath the ear and then they smack someone on top of it. They're idiots. They're absolute fools. But anyway, so there you go. So you can just message anyone these days. Look at this. Lewis is a true warrior. There's the cauliflower ear.
I do. That's from when me and Dave Smith from Legion of Skanks were roommates. We would get drunk and stoned and do couch jujitsu in the living room almost every day. to the point where it's like, we didn't know what we were doing. We would just try to tap each other out. And from doing it so often, I actually developed cauliflower ear.
Are you proud of that?
I'm just saying, bro. People see my ears now and they're like, this guy's a fucking bad motherfucker.
I'd be embarrassed if he did that.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that I'm a rugby player. They say, oh, you're a rugby player, are you? And I just go along with it because I can't be asked. So I say, yeah, I am. And I did play rugby at school. And so then they go, oh, what position? I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go. I say flanker. And then we get into this whole thing. And then if they keep asking, then I go, guys, I haven't played rugby in like 30 years. Okay?
They're like, why'd you
shut
lie?
The fuck up. I'm like, because I don't want to say I was a UFC fighter, okay? Because then that opens a whole other side of things. You know, if they don't know who I am, and then they got this whole other line of questioning that I don't want to go into. You know what I mean?
I agree with you, Mike.
All right, guys, let's take a quick moment. And you should know you can get all the latest episodes of the podcast right on our website, which is believeyoumepod.com. And you should know that that website was built and powered by Wix. Wix.com is the place to go to build websites for a fraction of the cost, substantially easier, super intuitive website to use. You don't know how to have to know HTML, coding, any of that stuff. Mike Harrington, who barely can tie his shoes, actually built the Believe You Me Pod website.
Which is crazy, because if you look at the website, it's nice. It functions. It works. It doesn't make mistakes. It doesn't forget things. It doesn't give you wrong information. It gives you what you want, which is information in a clear, precise, fashionable, stylish, professional way. At the end of the day, whatever you're doing, you got a business, you got a photography page, whatever it is, if you've got something to promote, you need a website. If you've got something to sell, you need a website. If you haven't got a website, you're not going to be taken seriously in this day and age. So get one, but do it cheap, do it affordable, and do it in style. So go to wix.com/believe and you can start your website there today. I mean, it's super, super easy. You start with a blank page and design the layout that you want, grow your business with a custom online store and out of the box booking system, even have live chat with Wix.com. They can do all of that, Lewis.
And they have built-in SEO tools. So, okay, search engine optimization is something that you don't know how to do. You don't know how to get your website to the top of Google's trackers and get people to happen upon your site. They have built-in easy-to-use tools to enable your website and your business to be found. Wix is the place to do it. I'm telling you right now, the deal is amazing. Go to wix.com/believe. You can start building a website for free. You don't even have to pay anything, but if you decide to use the premium plans, you also get a discount. Once again, that is wix.com/believe. wix.com/believe. Go build a website today and change the way you do business. All right, where were we?
What have you been watching on TV, Lewis? Anything good lately? What's going on?
Well, you know, my new show is Snowfall, which I love. Everyone's telling me to go watch that new movie, the Scorsese movie, The Irishman, which I haven't been able to find the time yet. Have you watched it yet?
Two things. One, started Snowfall last night. Love it. Very, very good show. Let me ask you this. Where do you watch this? Because I looked on HBO, couldn't find it. So then I went to Amazon and I had to buy it. Do you have to buy it? Did you buy it?
Hulu.
Motherfucker, I have Hulu. It's for free on Hulu?
Free on Hulu. Season one and two.
The whole season. Fuck. See, that money could have bought a Christmas present for some kids. You know what I mean? I just wasted that. $4.99, though. It's not too bad.
Can I tell you why it's better on Amazon? Number one, no commercials. Fuck you, Hulu, for putting commercials when we're paying for a subscription. That's psychotic.
I don't have commercials on my Hulu. I used to, but I don't anymore.
I have commercials on mine. Maybe there's another level that I got to upgrade to. I don't know. I got to take some of that Villa money and put it to
That's what I was going to say. Take the Villa money and upgrade to Hulu. We don't have ads. But no, Snowfall, really, really
and,
good.
Well, hold on. The other thing on Amazon is Hulu does not allow you to download the episode to your app. Amazon, you download the episode. So if you're flying at all in the next week or two and you want to watch a few episodes in flight, it's better to have it on Amazon anyway.
Oh, well, there you go. So Snowfall is good. Check that out. But also, you mentioned The Irishman, the Scorsese movie. I have seen it, Lewis. It was on at the Pictures, the cinema, for 30 days, and then it went to Netflix. 3.5 hours long. I was very excited for it. Massive Scorsese fan. Love Goodfellas. Love Casino. Love Wolf of Wall Street. Taxi Driver, I think that was a Scorsese. That is an awesome movie. I watched that recently on Netflix. Didn't like The Irishman.
Really?
Wasn't overly keen on it. Didn't like... Parts of it were very, very good. Very enjoyable. Far too long. right? I didn't finish it. Put it like this. I had to watch it in four segments. I put it on. I thought, this is boring. Turn it off. I thought, no, I'll go back to it. Everyone's raving about it. Went back to it. Watched a bit more. I thought, oh, this is boring. I'll turn it off. Then I saw everybody raving about it online. I thought, I'll go back to it. Then I got to a good bit. I'm like, this is fucking great. This is awesome. Then it got boring again. I'm like, oh, fuck this. It's boring. And then I thought, and then I saw everyone raving about it again. I thought, well, I might as well finish it. I've only got an hour left. So I went back to it and I did. I probably turned it off with 15 minutes left because it was going nowhere and I could see that it was almost over and it was just him, De Niro, as a very, 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 very old man. And it just didn't capture my imagination. I enjoyed it somewhat, but it's a slow goer. It's a slow burner for sure.
I haven't seen it. I probably will see it, you know, now that review doesn't make me super excited, but a lot of people liked it. People really into it. And honestly, to be honest, I like the fact that if I'm going to watch a 3.5 hour movie, watching it on Netflix is probably the better way to do it because you don't have to sit down. You go to the movie theater, you're stuck. If I go late at night, I fall asleep. Anytime it's a movie over 2.5 hours, I fall asleep almost every time I go to the movies, no matter how much I enjoy it.
Who wants to watch a movie for 3.5 hours at the cinema? I mean, that is a long time. I mean, what other movies? Avatar, was that like 3 hours? I mean, there's not many movies that are that long.
The Harry Potter movies are all crazy long. Those, you know, all of those fantastical movies are really, really long. The new superhero movies are pretty long. They're always like 2.5, 3 hours, the Avengers movies. But my problem is when it has, and I know it had a theatrical release, but I almost feel like they didn't even really talk about the theatrical release. I saw a couple advertisements. When a movie is straight to Netflix, it reminds me of it being straight to DVD, maybe because it's my generation. Doesn't it seem like it's not as big of a deal because it's a Netflix movie and it's not like, you know, the normal way they release a movie? I can't wrap my mind around it yet. I can't take Netflix movies seriously.
Well, my wife said something similar recently. I'm just looking up the box office numbers. The Irishman opened at 3 theaters in New York City, 5 in Los Angeles. Whilst Netflix does not publicly disclose box office figures for its films, IndieWire estimated that it grossed a strong $350,000 in its opening
weekend.
It's
just a handful of theaters. The only reason they do that, though, is so then it could be considered for an Oscar, an Academy Award. Because if they don't have a theatrical release, they wouldn't be considered. So it's just for those reasons. They do a handful of theaters. So yeah, it wasn't really anywhere.
Hold on. So in the new year, my documentary is going to be out and we're releasing it at a few select cinemas. So basically I'm on par. My movie's going to be on par with Scorsese's The Irishman. Oh, cool. Good to know. Good company.
I would say you're a shoo-in for documentary of the year. Possibly.
Oscar for sure. Definitely. No, but back to The Irishman. Great performances. Joe Pesci. He's too old, man. He's just, I don't know if it's makeup what they did to everybody, but they look old and that's fine growing up old. But if I see Joe Pesci, I want to see him stomping somebody's face out. You know what I mean? I want him saying, oh, you're a funny guy. What's so fucking funny about me? You're saying I'm a fucking funny guy? Oh, the way you tell the story, you're a funny guy. What, you think I'm a fucking comedian? How the fuck am I so fucking funny? That's what I want to see from Joe Pesci.
I like Joe Pesci. Him sitting there
old. And in a wheelchair and like looking like Joe, he doesn't stick a knife in anybody's eye. He doesn't kill anyone. He doesn't pull a trigger. Spoiler alert, everybody.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm about to watch this movie.
I'm sorry. It's okay. It's still a great movie. Just Joe Pesci doesn't kill anyone. There you go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like Joe Pesci a lot, but I like Joe Pesci more in his comedic performances. I watched Home Alone with my son about a week ago. My son loves it.
Classic.
My Cousin Vinny.
Yep.
What was that?
It was agreeing with you. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, it's a great comedy movie. What? There was nothing sarcastic about that. I didn't want to interrupt the flow, so I just went, yep, good. Home Alone's a fucking Christmas classic that will be getting busted out this year. Lucas loves to sit and watch the Home Alone movies. You know, watch the kids set the booby traps.
Because that's the fantasy, by the way. Being a little kid, like having your parents leave. Like, my kid's a pussy, so he would cry and, like, you know, probably, I don't even, he'd starve to death. He wouldn't do anything. But when I was a kid, the idea of being left home alone for an entire week and getting to, like, you know, just do whatever I wanted to, eat pizza, play, fucking.
I had that on my, I think it was my 9th or my 10th birthday of all fucking days. So I think. We had on my mom's side in Ireland, I think we had a family death. So my mom and the younger siblings went off to Ireland to the funeral. And my dad, my brother Conrad, pardon me, had a canoeing race and they went off for a few days. So my dad took Conrad because he was a big time canoeer back in the day when we were kids. So they went off to a canoeing race. My mom and my younger siblings went to Ireland, and I was left with my older brother Stephen, who was going to babysit me for a few days. Stephen liked to party and rave, and he fucked off, right, and didn't come back for like 3 days. And I was there by myself, and we had electricity in the electricity meter, and the electric went. Okay, but that's okay, because you push the emergency button, you get an emergency £5. But no, that was the emergency. Okay, so my 9th or 10th birthday, I remember opening my cards in pitch black, freezing cold fucking house, right? And there was a little bit of money in it, So I went to the corner shop and I bought what I thought was a radio control car, but it wasn't radio controlled. It was remote. It had a fucking wire, right? And the disappointment, I mean, I was already disappointed enough, no food, freezing cold house, pitch black, but I thought, ooh, I'm going to treat myself. I bought this radio control car. I get it out. It's got a wire on it. That really off. And then I'm playing with the car and I'm having to walk along with the thing because it's on a wire at the same time. And then a fucking bike, boom, comes round the corner, boom, goes right over the thing, cuts the wire, rips it, destroys the toy. I go back. I'm at home. I sit there, no food, eating fucking dry bread, fucking in a cold, dark house. Yeah. Being home alone when you're a kid, that's the reality. It fucking sucks.
You know, I got to be honest with you, Mike. You should not be donating your gifts to this poor family. You are that poor family. You've done enough. Treat yourself, Michael Bisping. Buy yourself a villa. Go to Jamaica. Enjoy yourself. Get some fans to send you some hard drugs. You've had a hard enough life. You've given enough.
It's okay. I'm over it, Lewis. I'm over it. I can now look at similar types of situations with a smile on my face, which is total bullshit because I saw that little kid this morning on that video we watched earlier. I started bawling my eyes out. I couldn't even pick up the phone to you. All right, where are we? What are we talking about? The Irishman, by the way, The Irishman's a good movie. It's a good movie. It's just very, very long. I like dramas. I don't need action. I don't need sci-fi or people being murdered. I don't. I appreciate a good drama. It's just a little too long, in my opinion. They could have trimmed it a bit, but still worth checking out. But it's a heavy one. It's a slow burn, but definitely check it out.
Hey, Mike, let's just take a quick moment and talk about one of our brand new sponsors, which is Viking Strength. Holiday season's coming up. If you're a fitness enthusiast or if you have friends, family members, loved ones that love to work out, Viking Strength is going to make it that much easier because they have the best products in the entire world. Right now, we got to talk about their incredible high altitude training masks that give you all of the benefits of working out in the cold without ever having to leave the gym.
Yeah, absolutely. You see it all the time. A lot of fighters, they're going up to the top of mountains. A lot of people go to Big Bear. I've trained there myself. And the benefits that it give you, I mean, it really, really does improve your cardio. Simple as that. Obviously, training in the cold, that's good for you as well. It restricts your oxygen flow. But the main thing is the altitude. You know, I forget the science of it, but it increases your lung capacity and your stamina. And once you come down the mountain, you can just run for longer. You can work out for longer. You can perform longer, faster. Better, harder, but not everybody has the time, the money, or even the desire to go train at the top of a mountain. Fortunately, with Viking Strength, with this training mask, they're lightweight, they're easy. You can wear them while you're training, you can wear them while you're jogging. Wear them in the house if you want. If you want to walk around the house pretending to be Darth Vader, you can do that. Don't recommend it, but if you want to go for a jog, you can do that. It will help you. You don't have to go to the top of the mountain. You don't have to endure the cold. You don't have to put chains on your tires at this time of year. No. Go to the gym, put the mask on. We bring the mountain to you, Lewis. It's that easy.
And also, if you guys are fans of UFC, The Ultimate Fighter, if you're a fan of Michael Bisping, you probably know the show. You probably remember them using similar masks on the show years ago. They brought them in to sort of emulate altitude training. It restricted the flow of oxygen. Not only just the physical benefits, but also the mental toughness. I mean, if you can mentally get through that type of workout, then when you're working out without those type of restrictions, it makes it that much easier. This is a really cool deal. For the holiday season with Christmas coming up, we're giving you an amazing discount. If you want it, you could even order this on Amazon. You don't even have to go to some specific website. You're going to Amazon right now. Guaranteed you're on Amazon doing all your holiday shopping. If you guys search for the Viking Strength training mask on Amazon, use the promo code BYMViking10. You're going to save 10% off your entire order. This is a great holiday gift.
Oh, absolutely. I thoroughly recommend this product. Thrive outside of your comfort zone and improve your mental focus with Viking Strength. All right. let's get back to the show.
Before we switch gears, because we have a bunch of big MMA news topics and some bookings. Real quick, as we're talking about being with our families in this holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, it very, very sad ending to the Walt Harris story. His stepdaughter, Anaya, was found dead. And it seems like it was, you know, two guys were arrested. It seems like it was foul play. It seems like it was she was murdered. And it's just really sad. It's heart-wrenching. Walt put out an Instagram thing and a message, and he seemed so broken up. And I think at one point I didn't downplay it, but I almost in my head I was like, oh, it's his stepdaughter. It's not actually his like blood daughter. It you know, even though it's not, you know, obviously it's terrible no matter what, but it's still sort of less of a blow. But when you look at his Instagram posts, I mean, it seems like this is somebody that was, you know, truly a daughter to him. He treated her as a daughter, and it's just horrible. I can't imagine, you know, what he's going through. So just wanted to send out some thoughts and prayers. I'm sure if they've set up any sort of GoFundMe or anything like that, we'll post it, and we'll, you know, it's just sad.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it really is every parent's worst nightmare. It really is every parent's worst nightmare. It's the thing that scares me to death every time my kids leave the house. You know, Ellie, she's a young, gorgeous girl. She goes out of the weekend. It scares me to death. And this, unfortunately, is a reality for Walt Harris and his family right now. So the deepest condolences from myself, everyone, Believe You Me. And we'll leave it there, really, because I mean, it's just so sad and so terrible. Yeah, rest in peace and absolute condolences from all of us, I guess. I mean, but we will share that GoFundMe page if there is one and do what we can, I guess.
All right, let's switch gears. In fact, well, before we switch gears, I'll just plug the network in the iTunes real quick, and then we can kind of clear the air, clear the slate. Real quick, you love the show, go to our iTunes right now, leave us a 5-star ranking, positive review. That helps us with the iTunes rankings, and it lets people discover the show. Also on Stitcher, Google Play, whatever other platform that you guys downloaded on, please just give us a little review or share it with some friends. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel right now. If you just search Michael Bisping Podcast or Believe You Me Podcast, YouTube channel is growing tremendously. We thank you so much for all of the kind comments. And last but not least, we have every episode we've ever done. The latest 30 episodes are available everywhere you can find podcasts, but you can have the entire on-demand library at your fingertips, ad-free, uncensored, with pre-release. Go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use the promo code BYM, get a 14-day free trial, and you save $1.50 a month if you decide to keep your membership. Okay, so MMA news.
Finally. I'm like stumbling and like I'm crutching my way through Black Friday talk, you know, finally, you know, and then we have to touch on some very, very sad stuff. And we're talking about kids with, you know, bad stuff at Christmas and blah, 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 blah. Now, finally, something I can speak with authority on. Okay.
Mixed martial
arts. The big news, the big one, we'll start with this. Of course, it's dominating the headlines everywhere. Donald Cowboy Cerrone taking on Conor McGregor, the notorious one, January 18th in Las Vegas, T-Mobile Arena at, this surprised me, 170 pounds at welterweight. Yeah, Conor's back, no doubt. You know, you guys can all get excited because everybody loves and gets excited when Conor fights. And rightly so, because love him or hate him, he's one of the most exciting fighters in the game. He brings it every single time he fights. And the lead-ups are also good as well. It's a lot of fun. Whether you love it, whether you hate it, either way, you always watch it. You know what I mean? The press conferences, he comes out, he puts on a performance. How do you feel about it all, Lewis? What do you think?
I like it. I mean, you're not going to – nobody's everyone's watching a Conor fight. No matter who he fights, all eyes are on Conor. It is what it is. He's just one of those guys. You can't even name why. I don't know. I don't even really respect Brock Lesnar as an MMA fighter, but if Brock Lesnar's fighting, I'm watching every single time. You know, there's an it factor there. There's something that draws people to them. So I think it is a good fight. You know, after we had that great interview with Gaethje, I was sort of rooting for that fight secretly. Like in my head, I was like, that's the fucking fight that should happen. I don't know how I feel about it at 170 pounds. I don't think it's necessary. It seems like a little lazy when guys spend a lot of their time fighting at 155 and then they agree to fight at 170. And I'm like, what's the reason? Do you just don't want to lose the extra weight? But
yeah. So here's what I think. I mean, first of all, there's a lot of people saying, you know, that it's not the right matchup. That Cerrone's been knocked out twice in his last two fights, and therefore this is an easy matchup for Conor. And I see the logic of that reasoning there. You can see that. You know, he did get knocked out off Ferguson and by, who was his last fight? Justin Gaethje. So he's had two bad losses in his last two fights. Although he's been around forever, Donald Cerrone can bring it every time. He took on Alexander Hernandez, who was undefeated at the time, at the performance of his lifetime. And then he took on Alia Quinta and just looked sensational in that fight. Yeah, he lost his last two, but he's still a tough fight out. Stylistically, the way that he fights and the way McGregor fights, they match up very, very well on paper. Now, the thing... 170 pounds. That is interesting, though. And here's what I think is the reason why they've done it. And here's why I think that it's a mistake for McGregor. Okay, they've both decided to fight at 170. That's great, because realistically, they're both fighters that compete at 155. You know what I mean? So if they're both fighters that compete at 155, then fuck it, let's just take the fight at 170, because we're both similar sizes. Therefore, we don't have to kill ourselves in training camp. We can eat, we can recover, we can have some carbohydrates. The weight cut won't be as bad come fight week. You know what I mean? So it makes sense. But here's the reality. When you stand face-to-face with Donald Cowboy Cerrone, he's a hell of a lot bigger than Conor McGregor. He's way bigger. Cerrone's about my size. Roughly, I mean, give or take. Obviously, not as thick, not as muscular, not as good looking, not as funny, not as witty. Probably can't wrestle quite as well.
Not as strong, not as fast, not as athletic.
Not as athletic. I mean, I have two good knees and two good eyes. I mean, can he say that after his long career? I don't know. That said, measure us, we're pretty similar. I mean, no doubt I would be taller as well. Definitely pip him to the post on that one, but he's in the ballpark.
I mean, you probably beat him with one hand tied behind your back. You could probably beat Donald Cerrone, but that's neither here nor there. We're not talking about you right now. Obviously, you are bigger, better, stronger, and in every way, physically and mentally superior to Donald Cerrone. Regardless, that's aside.
That's the point I was trying to make. But that aside, we are similar somewhat in height, right? But now, what does that tell you? That tells you that he's going to go into the cage probably a lot heavier than Conor, right? So Conor, in my humble mind, kind of made a misestimation there, or a miscalculation, should I say. But or maybe he knows that, maybe he doesn't give a fuck. But I think Cerrone's going to go in there stronger. I think he's going to win there bigger, heavier. And also, here's a key thing. If you don't have to cut as much weight, if you don't have to lose as much muscle in training camp, and you don't have to do that grueling weight cut the day before, you can take a punch better. And those last two fights that Cerrone lost, they were at 155. You know, at 170, Cerrone's going to be able to take those punches a lot better, in my humble opinion. So I'm not saying that means that Conor's going to lose. It doesn't mean that at all. What I'm saying is it's a tougher fight for Conor at 170 than what it is at 155.
My only problem with it, and maybe this is just me being a little bit of a stickler for like how it should be, it's like, yeah, if Conor beats Donald Cerrone, he'll probably be right there for a title shot. They'll just give it to him. Just coming back and having a win, he'll get a title shot. And it will likely be the shot for 155. So it's like, if you haven't had a win at 155 since Eddie Alvarez, that was the last win at 155. Yep. And that was literally, it'll be over 3 years since that had happened. Do you really deserve a title shot beating Donald Cerrone coming off of two losses at 170? You know, we've seen crazier things happen, but it's just not exactly how things should be. But who fucking cares? Nobody really, in the history books, nobody's going to look back and go like, well, we only beat Cerrone at 170. They want to obviously set up that rematch with Khabib.
Yeah, nobody really cares about that. Listen, at the end of the day, you know, there's certain things that can, you know, jump the rules, if you will. You know, and Conor's just such a fucking big bankable star. So if he gets another win, they can justify a title shot. However, he has said he wants three fights this year. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's just, you know, marketing or whatever. But if he does want three, beat Cerrone, maybe have one more. The talk is either the winner of Masvidal and someone else, possibly Masvidal, possibly Diaz, and then fight for the belt. But he's got to get past Cerrone first. And Cerrone's no walk in the park for anybody. But speaking of title shots, go on. I see.
Because, you know, as it relates, I got to give Conor a little bit of credit here, because he doesn't need to fight. He definitely doesn't need to fight Donald Cerrone. You know, he could sort of, if he wanted to come in and make his own rules and pick his own, you know, fights, This doesn't seem like this big, crazy marquee fight. Conor makes anything a marquee fight. But there's something I kind of like about the fact that Conor is saying, hey, I want to come back. I want to fight Donald Cerrone. I want to beat the BMF guy. And then I want to fight for the title. If he really means that and he goes for that game plan, that's kind of a badass thing to do when you're already a bazillionaire, world famous. You don't need to fight anymore.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it is. You know, I mean, he was calling out Frankie Edgar as well. Let's not forget that. He was calling out Frankie Edgar. So, you know, I mean, Frankie Edgar's a hell of a fighter. He's a legend of the sport, but he's also a 135er. He's not calling out Justin Gaethje. He's not calling out Tony Ferguson, but he's agreeing to fight the person that got knocked out in his last two fights. You know what I mean? But that said, I still think Cerrone has a good chance of beating him. It's a tough fight. It's a tough fight for both of them. Just when you think Cerrone's the type of guy that just when you think he's done, like, without looking at his record, I think he lost two or three in a row. Then he fought Alexander Hernandez, and I thought, he's done here. And he came back and looked sensational. Then he fought Alia Quinta, and I thought, no disrespect to Cerrone again, I thought Alia Quinta's going to beat him. He's got tremendous boxing, excellent takedowns, good cardio, excellent team. And Cerrone was fucking just one step ahead the entire time. So Cerrone's one of those guys, on game day, he can beat anybody. Also, another reason why I believe that Cerrone's a good matchup for this is that Conor's coming back from all this controversy, okay? He's had all these legal cases. He punched the old guy, all the rest of it. It's well documented. I'm not breaking any news there. I don't think Cerrone will mention any of that in the lead up to the fight. I think we're going to see a different style. I don't think we're going to see Conor turning up super late because he's on a bit of a PR campaign, if you will. You know, listen, you get a bit of bad press, you try and counter it with a bit of good press. You know what I mean? That's just the way it goes. I'm not throwing shade at him there. That's just what everybody does. And the reality is, you know, you can't deny he had a bit of bad press recently. So I think for this one, he's going to keep it on the fight. And I don't think there'll be too many personal insults. And Cerrone's the type of guy that if you don't start that shit with him, then he won't start that shit with you. You know, and he'll leave all the bar, the phone, maybe the other stuff as well. He'll leave that out of it, which is great for Conor because on a press conference with the whole world watching, you don't need your opponent bringing up the fact that you punched an old age guy in the bar and some of the other stuff that's going on. You know what I'm saying?
Are you predicting that Conor McGregor is going to be on his best behavior and going to be pretty respectful to Donald Cerrone?
100%. That is my prediction because if I'm Conor and I've got all that shit, I'm keeping my mouth shut until those fucking skeletons are a little bit more buried. You know what I mean? I'm not walking in there going, ah, da, 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 fuck you, motherfucker, da, da, da. Drink some whiskey. Come on, have some whiskey. Why don't you drink? Why don't you drink, you fucking wee bastard, you, right? I wouldn't be doing none of that.
If you're Donald Cerrone, as soon as he does that shit, you're like, oh,
I say,
really?
Listen, motherfucker, you got two fucking sexual assault cases pending. You just fucking knocked out an old, you tried to knock out an old doing a bar and he didn't even fucking flinch. You know what I mean? So, you know, play it nice and respectful and we'll just pretend that those things never happened and we're all good. People forget.
Watch leading up to the fight. It's like, we've never seen such a respectful Conor McGregor.
And like, he's changed. He's changed. There he is. You know what I mean? He's not mentioning the whiskey. He's not doing none of these. He's not being disrespectful. If anything, he was complimenting Cerrone, saying how nice a cut of his jeans were. And my word, what a lovely cowboy hat. Where did you get that feather from in the side of it? It's beautiful. I'm telling you.
Respectful Conor. He has to just do it because no matter what, he's just going to sit there and have to take it on the chin. Let's see.
Good look, man. There it is. There's Conor commenting on Cerrone's fucking Instagram. Good man Donald, enjoy your Christmas dinner, you. Happy holidays to you and the family from the McGregors here in Ireland. See you in 2020 with Bullseye Vision, right? And what that is the extension of the olive branch. It's like, hey, cordial times, okay? Let's not shroud this in negativity. Let's keep this positive. January 2020, new year, new me. Let's go. Bullseye vision. Keep it happy, sweet. Focus on the martial arts and let's be respectful. Martial arts, after all, are all about discipline and respect. And that's where I want to focus this fight.
Oh, shit. That's so funny. I'm excited for it. Look, right around the corner, too, I do like the fact that UFC fights do get booked. For some reason, big fights, we see them happen very quickly now. You hear some murmurs for a couple months, and then all of a sudden they book the fight and we're ready to go. So not too long away, a month and a half away, we're going to watch Conor McGregor return against Donald Cerrone. And you were bringing this up before, also officially booked for April, which is a little bit further out. But Khabib is going to officially defend his 155-pound title against Tony Ferguson. What's the date of that? April? It's in New York, April 18th in Brooklyn, baby boy. 18th.
Yeah, I'll try and be there. I mean, I think I'm working the Conor card for ESPN, so I'll be there. But that's a huge booking. Finally, Ferguson versus Khabib. Well, I say finally, it's not, is it? I mean, they've booked it four times in the past. I mean, that's crazy. But everybody wants to see this fight. And we've talked about this ad nauseum. Everybody knows if anyone deserves a title fight, it's Tony Ferguson. He just beat Cerrone. He's on a 12-fight win streak. He's beating people in style, Anthony Pettis. The list goes on. He deserves his title fight, and he's getting his title fight. And because this fight was booked four times in the past, I mean, the anticipation for it is so huge. So I feel like this will do huge numbers. I think this will be a big, big pay-per-view. And the timing, actually, if Conor was to beat Cerrone, I think the timing would work out for Conor to fight the winner, but he has got to get past Cerrone. But I'm telling you, I don't know if Khabib gets by Ferguson. I think on paper, when you look at it, Khabib's going to be the favorite. Of course he is. He's undefeated. I'm not sure where his record stands now. I did see in the comment section somebody berated me because I said Khabib was 25-0. I think he might be 28-0 or something. I don't know where he's at now. He's fucking undefeated still. I know that. But I think Ferguson definitely does pose some very, very interesting problems. He's got a unique style. Khabib's game plan, as we know, is going to be to take him down on, 28-0. Bloody impressive. And when you look at the people that Khabib beat as well on the way to getting that 28-0. No, but the thing is, Khabib's style is to take people down. We know this. He fights the same way every single time. Ferguson is very dangerous off his back. He's got that 10th planet jiu-jitsu style, which is very, very awkward to deal with. Also, he's got very, very good sweeps. He's going to use a lot of elbows from underneath. So it's a tough fight and a different stylistic matchup for Khabib. And if you take the wrestling and the ground stuff out of it, what are you left with? Well, a stand-up fight. And I think probably Ferguson has an advantage there. So this is a really, really tough fight for Khabib. It really, really is, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Tony's the guy. I'm sure Tony at this point, in retrospect, is now really happy to look back that some of those earlier fight bookings didn't ever happen, because that would be out of the way now. But I tend to agree with you. I mean, when's the last time that Tony lost? I'm looking at his record right now. He's got three losses. The last time he lost was May 2012. That's crazy, dude, to be fighting that many fights. And once again, just a laundry list of killers as well. Tony only fights high-level fights as well. So when you look at, like, actual records coming into the fight, it's rare that you see this guy, two guys that have been winning this much, this often, coming to head and finally fighting each other. So it's definitely, without a doubt, two of the best head and shoulders in the division. I just tend to lean toward the guy who's undefeated, who has looked, all basically unstoppable. Khabib, I mean, when's the last time we saw Khabib even lose a round?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure he has, but I'm looking at Ferguson's record. He's got one loss to some guy years ago on some shitty show. Then he's got another loss prior to the UFC. So you can't really count those. Maybe it was early in his career. He was still getting better. I mean, Jamie Toney's a guy that beat him. I don't know. I don't know the name. Then he gets in the UFC, right? Fights on, beats Ramzi Nijem, Aaron Riley, beats Eve Edwards on Team Bisping versus Team Miller, Ultimate Finale back in Vegas in December 2011. Right?
Who was on your, was I he on your that, team?
No, he wasn't. No, he was just like, he wasn't on anyone's team. He was just like an extra fight put on that card. And then he loses to Michael Johnson after that. Right? That was a long time ago. And if I'm not mistaken, when he lost to Michael Johnson, I think he broke his arm in that fight, but still continued to fight, but lost the decision. And then, as we know, went on this ridiculous win streak. 12 fights, Lando Venata, Dos Anjos, Kevin Lee, Anthony Pettis, Cerrone, earlier on, Edson Barboza, Josh Thompson. I mean, look at those names. I mean, the man's accomplished. He's got excellent skills, BJJ, black belt, funky striking, and he's not scared of Khabib. He's not scared of Khabib at all. And that's a big thing. That's a big part of it. You know, if you've got that little bit of doubt inside your mind, that can multiply, can fight that and affect your performance. Tony Ferguson, and I'm not surprised having the record he has, being on the run that he is, he's got no fear in his heart. And he's a little bit crazy as well, which definitely fucking helps. So this is a tough fight for Khabib.
Yeah, super tough. Very excited about that. We'll be there in New York. Maybe, if the MMA gods will allow us, we'll get some sort of live Believe You Me on the Friday night. That's enough time to really get ahead of it, you know?
Let's do it. Let's book it in. I'll be there 100%. Whether I'm working the fight or not, I'll be there. I'll make an effort. Book it in right now. Unless a movie comes up, I'll be there. Live Believe You Me on the Friday night in New York. Boom, Brooklyn, book it. There you go. What more do you want, Lewis? A commitment? You've just got one. Strong.
I got it. I got it, baby boy. We're doing it. Look out, April 17th, the Believe You Me podcast live in New York City. Another big booking. We didn't really get into it too much last week. We touched on it. I don't even know if it was official when we touched on it. They were just talking about it. But John Jones officially going against Dominic Reyes in February. I guess the trash talk is starting to heat up a little bit. I look good. I hope Dominic Reyes can come in and win this fight, but you know, it's a hard sell for me right now. John Jones opened as a crazy heavy favorite. Harrington, you have some more info on this, because they're going back and forth on Twitter right now, and I know you love to keep your finger on the Twitter pulse.
So essentially, Dominic Reyes is not showing any respect to John Jones in the lead up to this fight so far. Went on Twitter, said, I'm already looking forward to the rematch. He told Damon Martin of MMA Fighting, I'm already planning the rematch for AT&T Stadium in Texas. That's already in the works. I already know what's going to happen. I'm going to beat him. It's not going to be enough. Perfect. Let's do it in AT&T Stadium, except this time it's my pay-per-view.
Okay. I like it. I mean, first of all, can everyone just stop saying they want to fucking fight at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium or whatever it is? You know, and that's what everyone's saying. Oh, yeah, it's going to be the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. Never been done. Never had a fight there yet. I don't think they'll be doing one for Dominic Reyes. No offense, Dominic. Great fighter. Great fighter. And I actually believe he has a good chance of beating John Jones. The fact of the matter is this for John. Everybody loses at some time. You know, and I don't think John has slowed down. Some of his performances, they aren't as electrifying as they once were. But that said, he's still beating good, solid competition. But I like what Dominic's doing there. He's not allowing John too much respect or any respect in his head. Like when I fought Anderson Silva, you know, a lot of people were shocked because I went out there and I talked a lot of shit about Anderson Silva. But I had to strip him down in my mind mentally. I couldn't hold him on a pedestal and look at him and revere him and give him too much respect. I was like, no, this guy, you know, he had a history with performance enhancing drugs. That's all I needed. You know, that was my angle to attack him and try and discredit him as a fighter and bring him down. Because if you look at them and you hold them on a pedestal, then you're going to fight that way. You know, you are going to allow a little too much respect. So you got to strip them down, look at them as just another human being. And in your mind, think that you're going to win this fight. So Dominic Reyes is already psychologically handling it from the right perspective. And physically, as we've seen, I mean, he went out there, knocked out Chris Weidman in the first round. We don't see that happen very often. So Chris Weidman, you know, he's a tough fighter, former champion at middleweight. So listen, you know, Reyes is undefeated. I think he's, what, 12-0? I think he's beating some good competition. Uzdemir, he just knocked out Weidman. Oh, Vincent Pru, I think. So, you know, he's got some good wins on there. I think it's a tough fight. So, yeah, looking forward to it. I really am.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got to do what he's got to do. I respect it more than him being, you know, buttoned up and respecting John Jones and talking about how John Jones is the best. Yeah, go try to talk shit to John Jones. I don't think he's got any shot. I mean, he's got decisions, close decision with Uzdemir, decision over St. Pru. Then he knocked out Chris Weidman. I mean, Weidman, it's not a really 205-pounder. And, you know, it's not the old Weidman. It's not even like Weidman when he was on top of his game. So it's kind of a tough sell. But once again, undefeated, you never know. Who knows? I would love to see him come out and fucking knock out John Jones. Even if he does that, though, he would have to knock out John Jones. He'd have to literally kill John Jones with his bare hands in order to sell 1/10 of Cowboy Stadium. I mean, he would have to do so much in order to get Cowboy Stadium. No offense to Dominic Reyes. I'm sure he's great. But
that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. No offense to Dominic Reyes, but I don't... Listen, if you beat John Jones, I think he is correct. There probably would be a rematch because they always say if it's a very dominant champion, then they do an immediate rematch. Well, there's no champion that's been as dominant as John Jones. I mean, since winning the belt in, I don't know when it was, when he took it off Shogun, when he absolutely destroyed him, he's been the champion ever since. So that'll be a good one. Looking at the block here on the MMA news...
Well, hold on real quick. Before you move on, you mentioned something there. What do you think about that, though? In a weird way, I think it should almost be policy that if a champion has defended their title, that they get an automatic rematch if they lose their title. I don't care if it's a flash knockout. I don't care if they're dominated. I think if you defend your title, it should be respect to the champion that they get a rematch if they lose their title. And it's just from a business perspective, I just think it would always do decent numbers regardless.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it all depends what you put in the paperwork beforehand. Like this weekend, I'm looking forward to this one. Anthony Joshua is taking on Andy Ruiz. Mm. I know you're not a big boxing guy, but former longtime champ, Joshua got knocked out against Andy Ruiz. A guy came in, he was a big underdog. Nobody gave him a chance. Knocked out Joshua in the 7th round there, having a rematch. I think for somebody like Jones, who was the champion for so long, as I said a moment ago, I think you should get it. But it all depends what's put in the paperwork beforehand. I think any champion that has did the belt 2-3 times, I think should get an immediate rematch. But it needs to be in there. It needs to be contracted. If it's not contracted and I'm the champion, I might say, nah, fuck you. You know what I mean? I'm not saying me personally. I mean, one may say, no, we just did that. I beat you. I mean, if you go out there and you blitz him in the first round, that's a hard sell. But also on the flip side, if you get knocked out in the first round, you could say, hold on a minute, bud. I messed up. You caught me. Let's do that again because I guarantee you won't get me in the first round. So it's a weird one because on one side, you could say, well, hold on. I knocked you out in the first round. Therefore, you don't deserve an immediate rematch. I dealt with you so quickly. But if you're the person that gets knocked out, you could say, hold on a minute. Yeah, you didn't beat me consistently for 5 rounds. You weren't the better fighter. You just caught me in the first round. I made a mistake, slipped on a banana, a proverbial banana peel, whatever you want to call it. I made a mistake and you caught me. I guarantee in the rematch that won't happen. So I don't know. I don't know which way you lean, but either way, Dominic Reyes, John Jones, I think Reyes will give him a good fight. I know that for a fact, but there's plenty of other topics going on in mixed martial arts. Where do you want to go?
This was interesting. Give me the exact quote, Harrington, because I don't want to massacre this. But Robert Whittaker was talking about just the downsides of winning the title, and I thought you could just give a little perspective on this, Bisping, because I thought this was an interesting point that he had made. So give me the quote, Harrington.
All right. In conversation with Ariel Helwani, he said, "I didn't really like being champion that much. It comes with some pros, but the cons really started distracting me. There was a lot of media and a lot of expectations and a lot of self-imposed pressure. It didn't agree with me super well. I like the fight. I like the challenge. I like the next opponent. I like just trying to work out how I'm going to beat you, and I love being the underdog."
Yeah, same here. I mean, when I was champion, I hated having the title of champion of the entire world. I hated being on a really, really high purse. Hated the pay-per-view points. Hated all the endorsement deals that would come in. Hated children and kids and sycophants waiting outside my house just for a glimpse at me. Maybe, perhaps, I would find the time in my day to give them an autograph, shake their hand. Endorsement deals, TV, movie deals, all coming through thick and fast. I hated it. That's, you know, I just wanted to go back to the old times, slogging in the gym, you know, driving the old car that would break down everywhere, you know. Of course, I'm being silly. And I do get what Robert's saying. I understand it. But I mean, because sometimes, all right, I'm being silly, I'm being stupid, and I'm trying to have a laugh. But I've got a point as well in what I say. But I understand what he's saying, you know, because when you're coming up as a mixed martial artist, when you're trying to be a fighter, it's a grind, but the only struggle is getting better, becoming a better fighter. But then when you become the champion, you have all these obligations, you know. And I just said a double-edged sword knocking somebody out in the first round. They are a double-edged sword, but it comes with the territory. And like with anything in life, if you become successful, there becomes a little bit of, you know, what's the word? Expectations, shall we say. You know, and it certainly brings pressure because when you're the champion, you have got what everybody wants. Everybody wants it. So people get jealous. People talk shit. People say that you're ducking people. You've got to do more media. You've got to do more interviews. You know, the expectations are higher, but it comes at a price, but it also comes with the extra money, with the adoration, and with the title of being the best in the world. So I do sympathize with what he's saying. But I guarantee, I think if you gave him an opportunity to be the champion again, he'd take it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, what you're talking about is, you know, it's not exactly unique to mixed martial arts. If you're in entertainment, or, you know, really, if you're just trying to, if you're striving for greatness in any industry, there's going to be pitfalls, especially if you're trying to sort of, you're becoming famous. You know, there's another side of it. It's like when you're a young comedian coming up, you can kind of say whatever the fuck you want, right? Because who cares? Nobody's listening. You're just practicing, and you have a lot of freedom. And now you see guys that are going out, you know, Pete Davidson from SNL. I know Pete, but he's getting shit right now because he's making audience members sign a $1 million non-disclosure agreement saying that they won't tweet about anything, they won't take any videotape, you know, because he's so famous at this point that people are looking for the next mistake for one of these guys to make so they could jump on, try to take their career away, try to take SNL. But I guarantee you, Pete Davidson is not trading places with some fucking young open micer in the trenches. Just like Robert Whittaker, if another title shot came his way, you better fucking believe he's taking it. You think he's going to go, no, I want to fight the number 12 ranked guy. I really just feel better there. Fuck that.
Yeah. You know, I really want to work my way up the old-fashioned way, take out a few of the contenders. You know, I really don't feel like I deserve a rematch just right now. So, you know, give me, as you said, the number 12 guy. No, listen, I get it. And I'm a fan of Robert Whittaker. If you don't like Robert Whittaker, you got a problem. He's one of the nicest people you could ever meet. Doesn't talk shit about anyone. Super respectful. Even when Adesanya was talking a bit of shit, he never really rose to it, you know. So Robert's a good guy. And I do see what he's saying, but that's bullshit about Pete Davidson, by the way, doing that. He's trying to get people to sign a $1 million NDA if you, what, like...
It says if you even tweet or write a Facebook review, give any opinions online. Now, I talked to another comic...
Well, fuck that guy. Why would you go and pay to see him perform if he's saying, oh, by the way, I may sue you for $1 million?
Well, somebody else said this morning, and maybe it's true. I guess there's a lot of like big name comedians when they make you sign an NDA, and they do it. I guess it's more common than not. And I think Pete's somebody that is very clickbaity, so maybe this isn't the first time, and it's not exclusively unique. But if I'm a comedian, I am a comedian. If I hear that, if somebody says, "Oh, the contract with your audience is that you're saying that you could sue them for $1 million if they tweet that they didn't like your set," I'm personally going to take the responsibility to make sure that that's taken out and that my fan base knows that that's not who I am and that's not representative of me. So Pete should come out. And I know, like I said, Pete's a good dude. He really is. But he's very famous at this point. He's dating Ariana Grande. He's dating celebrities.
Yeah. I heard him on the Howard Stern show. I got to say, he didn't win me over. He did not win me over. I wasn't a fan, you know.
The problem is, I've said this about Jon Jones. When you become a millionaire, when you're really young, you become famous when you're really young. It's difficult. You're growing up in the spotlight. You know, you're making all your mistakes in front of the camera. Justin Bieber is the example. You know, everyone like treats this kid like he's a dickhead. You're like, he's a kid. He grew up famous. He's going to make mistakes. And when he makes a mistake, all eyes are on him. The mistakes that me and you made, nobody gave a fuck because we were just punk-ass kids in whatever hometown we were in. So I give them a little bit of credit and say, well, all right, you know, I got to take everything with a little bit of a pinch of salt.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, I think a lot of people in England, if they're listening to this, probably don't even know who Pete Davidson is, comedian on Saturday Night Live. Is he a good comedian? I've only seen like little bits. I've never seen him do any stand-up. Is he actually a funny guy? Because all I know Pete Davidson for is that he mocked that war veteran. Did he have one eye or something like that? And as we know, you fucking leave the one eye brigade alone, okay? You have a bit of respect. I don't care what platform you lost your eye on, whether it was in the Second World War, the Iraq War, or in the battlefield of the Octagon, right? That is sacred ground, and you fucking have a bit of respect, Pete Davidson.
I like Pete, and Pete is a funny comic, but once again, you know, he got famous very quick, so he didn't have to do what everyone else had to do, which is spend 10 years, 15 years getting really good. When you get famous very, very fast, you know, look, nobody's going to turn down the fame. Nobody's turning down the opportunities. But on the other side of it, you don't have the same exact chops that those other guys that were in the trenches for 15 years had. So, Pete is very good. He's definitely talented. But no, if you're going to compare him to like a Bill Burr or a Louis C.K. or like one of these guys who are just veterans, you know, been around forever.
I was going to say, I'm no comedy connoisseur. I am not an aficionado of the various stand-up acts frequenting the stages these days. But it sounded to me that you were treading very, very politely around insulting him. You're like, oh, yeah. You know, he's good. I mean, he wasn't in the trenches for 15 years and he kind of got thrust into the limelight a little bit. But yeah. He's a funny guy.
He's good. Pete's a very funny comedian. Yes. But I'm an elitist, dude. The people that I think that are great. I mean, I think there's like a dozen great comedians where I'd be like, those guys are actually great. So it's hard for me to compare him to those guys.
Sure. No, I know. I get it. I'm just messing around. All right. So where are we? What are we doing?
We do have some questions.
Where are we going with?
I wanted to touch on this. Just kind of a funny little topic as a side note. We were talking a little bit of boxing before, and I know Tyson Fury has been in the news recently talking about wanting to either make the transition to MMA or have somebody fight him in boxing. Dana White, he mildly trashed Tyson. Very, very, very mildly trashed Tyson. And I guess now Tyson Fury's father has come out in defense of Tyson Fury. But tell me what, first, Harrington, what Dana White said, and then tell me what Tyson Fury's father said.
Well, Dana simply said Tyson would get smashed if he entered the octagon after that fight with Otto Waylon, where he was badly cut and the fight was almost stopped. To which Fury's father responded, furious, how can you write my son off like that? Let him talk to me like that. I'll fight him. Keep my son's name out of your mouth. How does he know about smashing anybody when Tyson comes from a smashing family? You know what I'm saying? When I can probably smash Dana with one punch. Ooh. You know what I'm saying? So how can you write my son off like that? You can't write up a man with Tyson's ability or heart or will to win. He knows he's talking stupid.
Fucking, I've never heard the word smash or smashing in one sentence so many times. Well, Dana's right. Dana's right to a certain degree. Dana's not going to, you know, you got to step. I understand Tyson's dad saying that. Tyson Fury's dad saying that. Of course, you know, somebody's talking about his son. His son's one of the best boxers on the planet. The lineal champ is his title. So, of course, he's going to jump to the defense of his son. On the flip side, you got Dana White, who promotes the UFC, which is a completely different sport to boxing, right? So, of course, Dana's going to say that. He's not going to say, oh, a guy that doesn't even compete in mixed martial arts could come over to the UFC and beat everybody. That's just not a logical statement for Dana to ever make. Even if it was true, you're a promoter, you wouldn't say that. And I'll be honest, in the UFC, it is a different sport. Tyson is going to be fucked. But it is fun that Tyson Fury's dad is calling out Dana White. I mean, what do we think? Do we have any... Do we have a tale of the tape of some sorts?
We do have a tale of the tape. Very interesting. First of all, didn't realize that Gypsy John Fury, former professional boxer. So he's not just talking out of his ass right now. This guy actually has fought 8-5 record as a professional heavyweight, losing his one and only title shot.
Tyson used to say back in the day that I got knocked out of Gypsy John. Is he saying that Tyson Fury's dad knocked me out outside a nightclub in Blackburn? I swear to God, the tweet back in the day was like, yeah, Mike got knocked outside a nightclub in Blackburn by Gypsy John. And I was like, what the fuck? Number one, I lived in America at the time, so it never happened. But, oh, Gypsy John, your dad. Go on, give us the tale of the tape. This will be funny.
Tale of the tape. Okay, Dana White, 50 years old.
Hold on. Do we have an image? Do we have a cross-section image?
No, but you know what? I'm going to make him put it together in post. Don't you worry. It's happening in post. Edit, baby boy.
We need an image of them both. We need them all there side by side. I want to see that because that'll be hilarious.
It will be funny. It'll be made nice. Have Frank. Just get Frank on it now, honestly. He'll have it done in the next half hour. It'll be easy. All right, real quick. So, tail of the tape. Dana White, 50 years old, 6 feet even, 72.5-inch reach advantage, 205 pounds, whereas Gypsy John Fury, 54 years old, 6'3" 3-inch reach advantage, 75 inches reach, and 200 pounds. These guys are honestly right around each other's size, right around each other's weight.
No. I got to say, this doesn't sound good for Dana. Dana, don't take the fight. Don't take the fight. You say 6'3", he's only 4 years older. He's got a 70-something inch reach. He is a professional boxer. I don't know. I mean, I love Dana. We're good buddies, you know, and I'll never talk shit about Dana, but I don't know about this one.
Can we look at their experience maybe a little bit? Okay, so Gypsy John Fury went 8-5 as a professional, losing his one and only title shot. Also, interesting tidbit, side note, Fury was sentenced to 11 years in prison for gouging out a man's eye in 2011. He was paroled in 2015, whereas Dana White never fought professionally but was a boxing trainer in Boston before leaving to become a fight promoter in Vegas. So if you look at their fight experience, maybe it's a little bit more evenly matched.
All right. If you look at them on paper, you've got one guy that's the bigger guy, one guy that was a professional boxer, one guy that did years in prison for gouging out another man's eyeball, and is known as the name Gypsy John. On the flip side, you've got a damn near billionaire, okay, that never fought professional in his life, knows a lot about fighting. He's probably the best promoter on planet Earth. But isn't a fighter, he is the promoter, okay? Boxing coach, not the same. It's not the same of being a boxer, you know what I mean? So listen, as I say, you know, Dana's a very good friend of mine, but I don't know about this one. I don't know.
And also, I mean, honestly, with the whole gouging out of a man's eye, I just saw the emotion come over your face. You're like, this guy's not human.
I'll train Dana for the fight. I said, Dana, we're going to get this motherfucker. He's out there taking people's eyeballs. Fucking, it's Vitor Belfort times 10. Let's get this guy. Gypsy John, you going fucking down. I'm going to train fucking Dana. We're going to take him out.
Oh, God.
What was the in Kill Bill? Was it Kill Bill 2 where they took the girl's eye out? That was That's what Gypsy John does. All right. So
it's a signature move.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on. Let's move on before I get fired from the UFC.
So look, we got a little bit of time left. We got a few questions. Got a couple good ones. Some video questions in today, and then a fun little piece of content that a BYM fan created. And you know we love when you guys send us content, so we will promote your content, especially if you take it as seriously as this guy did. So a couple questions. You guys can shoot us an email at bympod@gmail.com. Video questions we love, audio questions we love. If you guys can create any sort of fan art or content or anything like that, if it's funny or we feel like we can make fun of it, we will play it on the show. So by all means, send everything through. We really love the fan interaction. And without further ado, Harrington, Brian, who do we got up? And give us some information here.
All right, this is David Robinson.
Hi guys, David from Sheffield here. I just wanted to ask a quick question. Mike, in your job as a fighter, and Lewis, in your job as a comedian, what's the worst day you've ever had at work? Thank you, huge fan of the show.
The worst day I ever had at work, I mean, there's been a lot. I mean, back in the day, I could do a full book on stories that happened to me whilst at work. I remember one time I worked at Time Computers. I worked at Time Computers and they put together, you know, it was like a production line. They build computers, obviously. You screw a little keyboard in or a fucking circuit board or whatever, and it goes down the production line to do something else. One of the shitty factories near our house. And I got Robbie, an old mate of mine. I got him a job. And he was getting the induction at work. He was getting shown around. And we went off, we had our lunch break, we came back in and he had to sign something to say we came back and we had to put the time of when we came in. And this guy was staring at me. I think I've told this story before. And I'm like, what are you looking at? And he's like, what the fuck are you looking at? And I thought, he's not going to do anything, we're at work. Let's remember this guy, he was like, he looked gigantic. He looked like he was on every single steroid under the sun. And I was like a cocky little 18-year-old kid. I thought, he's not going to do anything, we're at work. Or what? I go, what? You got a fucking problem? Like that old cheeky. And he comes up to me, gets in my face and headbutts me, right? Headbutts me at work. Then that's that, right? We're fighting. We're having a full-on brawl, right? He's coming at me. I'm kicking him. I'm punching him. It was a really, really good, entertaining fight. In fact, you know, I was definitely winning on the judges' scorecards. And then as that happened, Robbie, who was getting the induction, him and like 30 other people that were starting that day, they come onto the shop floor and they're like, what the fuck? There's a whole fight going on. Like, oh my God, tell me that's not Michael. And then sure enough, there I am fucking brawling around on the floor with some guy. We both got fired, but I never started the fight. I mean, that was one of many, many shitty days at work. But we thank you for the question, David, I believe. But Lewis, what's your worst day at work? I mean, have you ever had a job? I mean, I know you used to be a salesman extraordinaire, but I've worked a pretty cushy life these days.
I mean, literally, I've worked every day since I was 11 years old. I've never not had a job. I've worked 7 days a week. There's nobody that you've ever met in your entire life that works harder than me. And I was I mean, as poor as you could possibly be up until 3 years ago, Michael Bisping, you've been living in a half mansion for 12 fucking years. I will not be I will not be condescended and told that I have a cushy lifestyle when I was sleeping on a fucking floor 3 years ago. 3 years ago.
Whoa. You think life was always half mansions and Maseratis for me? No, baby boy.
You don't have a Maserati anymore, motherfucker.
I don't have a Maserati. We've got an eviction notice on this. I need to fight again, doggy. We're getting kicked out. Never mind fucking toys for fucking children and strangers. Send the toys to my house. We are broke. I don't have a job. But I need money. Send them to me. But Lewis, go ahead. Your worst day.
My worst job. I think he was actually specifically saying worst day on the job and fighting or comedy. But I'll answer the same way you answered, which is just the worst day of work ever. I mean, they were all pretty bad. You know, having a job sucked. I think working Taco Bell was probably my least favorite job. And I remember I quit one night. It was like my manager had me there alone. It was me. It was one person. It's supposed to be like six people behind the counter at Taco Bell. There's a drive through and there's a walk-up counter. There's a manager. And it was me and my manager. My manager was just in the phone or in the booth or in the manager's booth on the phone with her boyfriend the whole time. And I'm trying to get a million orders out. And it was just, at one point there was like 30 cars just piled up behind the drive-thru. And at one point I just said, I can't do this anymore. I don't know what else to tell you. And I just walked out. There was like orders just in the thing. And I just walked out and I never looked back. But I had a bunch of shit jobs throughout my entire teenage years, early 20s.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's say worst job. Because worst day, that's hard. I mean, we all have bad days, you know. But what was the worst job you ever did?
The worst job I ever had. It's going to sound so pussy because, like, there are guys that fucking are like coal miners who, like, you know, it's like, you know, there are people.
No, but I don't necessarily mean, you know, like coal miners or whatever. I mean, that's hard physical labor. But I mean, in terms of soul destroying, in terms of boredom, in terms of, you know, just like not achieving your potential or just like, you know, waste of time. What was the shittest job you've ever done? Because I've had a few. Oh. I mean, I've done everything under the sun. Go on.
I know. I remember there was a telemarketing job that I have. And I don't even know what the company was for. They said it was for like to refinance your mortgages. It was all kids. It was like 18, 19-year-old kids. And you'd make like $8 an hour and you get a commission. But the commissions were paid based off of Social Security numbers. So if you got a Social Security number for the person, you get a certain commission. Then if you get their significant other Social Security number as well, you also get another commission. And I know we were just creating, it was like, I worked for a company that was like doing identity theft or something, but I remember just being on the phone with some old lady at one point, and I was like, so miss, I'm just gonna need your Social Security number. And she was just so innocent. She was like, hold on, let me go get my card. And she started telling me the number, and I felt bad. I was like, we're going to ruin this fucking woman's life. And I hung up the phone, and that was like probably the most soulless job that I ever had because I knew I was scamming people.
Oh, God, that's bad. That's bad. I mean, I was trying to think of my worst job, but you mentioned sales. Doing the door-to-door salesman thing, I mean, that was bad for me. This was around 2000, 2001. We were absolutely broke. We had a house. We had no business buying a house at the time. Then we had children, and we had no business having children. But, you know, a couple has unprotected sex. Guess what happens? You have kids. All of a sudden, we've got kids. We've got a mortgage. And we've got no money coming in. So that was terrible. So I took this job, door-to-door salesman. Trying to get people to change their gas supplier from British Gas or whoever they were with to Npower. And, you know, we'd get picked up and they sold us on this dream that if you, you know, convert so many people, you get promoted. And then the next few people that get hired, they work underneath you. And you get your own sales, but then you've got your own team and you get a commission of their sales. And then when they get promoted, they then get their own team and you're like at the top of the triangle and you're getting a piece of everybody's commission. You know what I mean? And one day you'll live in a villa and you'll have a Ferrari and all this type of stuff. Do you know what I mean? That's what they sold you on. The reality of it is that I'm going door to door in Blackburn and Blackpool and all these shitty, you know, kind of poor neighborhoods in very, very ill-fitting clothes because my wardrobe back then, I didn't have a suit. So I had some like really bad pants, a really badly fitted shirt. I was overweight. I was about 230 pounds. I had a skinhead and zero sales experience. I could hardly string a fucking sentence together. And they would pick us up in a van. They would drive us there to this town and say, right, this is your area. We'll reconvene here at this pub in 4 hours. Okay. And you go off and you knock on the door. And it was just soul destroying because a lot of times you'd open the, hello, sorry to bother you. they just shut the door in your face. You go off to the next one all day, all night. And it was commission only. And if you didn't do any, get any sales, you made no fucking money. And it gets to the point where it's freezing cold and it's gone dark and you're still walking door to door and you're knocking on the doors. And most people are just like, yeah, sorry, mate, not interested. Boom, shut the door in your face. And you haven't made any sales. And I've got two kids at home. I've got the mortgage payment stacking. And I'm like, for fuck's sake, I just want to fucking make some sales, please, for crying out loud. And then we meet at the pub, and we're at the pub, and I remember I had no money, and they're all having food, and they're playing pool, and they're putting money in the fruit machines, you know, like the gambling machines. And I said to this guy, I said, hey, can you do me a favor? You wouldn't just buy me like a lime and soda, would you? Which is like a drink for about 50 pence. He's like, oh, no, no, mate, can't afford it, can't afford it. But then he carries on putting pound coins into the fruit machine. I was like, you fucking cocksucker. One day when I have made it, I'm going to find you and I'm going to make you feel as shit as I feel now. Let me tell you, that was a shit job. It was soul destroying. And that's why if I ever get door to door at my house now, I take the time. You know what I mean? I talk to them, even if I don't want to partake in what they're selling, you know, I hear them out. I speak to them like a human being because they're same again. They're just trying to make ends meet, Lewis.
Dude, being broke, I mean, ugh. And, I am being a little bit exaggerative. I wasn't sleeping on a floor 3 years ago, but I've been, you know, in very recent memory, broke. I remember working when I was 21 years old on the streets of New York City selling comedy club tickets and just being in the dead of winter and approaching strangers and being like, hey, do you want to go to a comedy club? And they're like, get a real job. And they keep walking, and you're like,
yeah,
I'm going to fucking kill you. This is the worst ever. And money can't buy you happiness. It cannot. Okay, but I will tell you right now, it makes all of those other problems hurt a little less. You know, if I have some cash, yeah, fine, whatever it is. I still have all those same problems. Wherever you go, there you are. But I can get a massage. I can buy a nice little vacation for me and my friends and my family. I can, you know, I can drown my sorrows in like, a nice little toy or a nice bottle of liquor or whatever it is. When you're broke on top of all of that, you feel lost. You feel like you're drowning. That feeling you're talking about, like that being in the bar, watching everyone having money and not having money. And making me feel so bad right now, just knowing that feeling. And I even think about it. I didn't even have a family at the time.
No, for sure. And that's why that thing this morning, you know, really pulled on my heartstrings, because I hate seeing children, you know, that are suffering. It fucking blows my mind. But you're absolutely right in what you just said. I mean, my mind just went blank. What did you say a second ago?
About money buying happiness.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. It doesn't buy you happiness, but what it does, it relieves the stress. You know what I mean? Yeah, of course. If you have money, you ain't going to get a wife and children and a real sense of purpose, but you aren't going to have that day-to-day thing of, you know, I can't afford this. I can't afford the nice things. Being able to buy your children, you know, food, clothes, and just the nicer things in life that put a smile on your face. You know, every time a bill comes through the door, it doesn't cause an argument. I remember me and Rebecca, we used to argue all the time because she'd come back from the supermarket and I'd look through the bags. I'd be like, what the fuck is this, babe? You know what I mean? Why are you buying the expensive brand? Fuck that, buy the cheap brand. And we'd have stupid arguments because you can buy cheaper ones. We can't afford this. He's like, Michael, I just want to buy like the nicer wipes or whatever it was. Do you know what I mean? Or the better nappies or it's for the children. Do you know what I mean? So it removes all of that day-to-day stress. It doesn't buy you happiness, but it does make your life happier, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it really does. Just being able to just do what you want to do sometimes. You know, even like, you know, Thanksgiving, I hosted Thanksgiving at my house. Like, I just never looked at the bill. I never looked at the receipts. I never worried about what I was buying when I was buying like hors d'oeuvres and appetizers. And it's nice to just say, hey, you know what? Yeah, maybe I'm not rich by any means, but I don't have to look at everything and count. I remember my mom counting the food in the cart as she's bringing it up and then putting certain things to the side as we're at the register, because if we didn't have enough money, we weren't going to get those specific things. And she was like, well, I'll wait to see what the total is. That feeling, it was just embarrassing as a kid. It just, you didn't feel really good. And I think it sounds kind of shallow when you sort of put so much onus on money and finances. But it's, you know, it's really nice to be able to just do things like, you know, as I'm talking about bringing my family on this vacation, it feels really nice. My family, I went to like the biggest vacation we ever took as a kid was like to the Jersey Shore. And that was very far and few between. It was, you know, a couple hours drive. And to be able to take my aunt and my niece and to do nice things with my family now, it makes me feel really good. And it makes me feel really, really fulfilled. And that is probably more satisfying and makes me feel happier than most other things in my life. So in a sense, I'm buying myself happiness.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. But you know, I mean, good for you, Luce. You've worked your ass off, and you know, it's not easy. It's not easy. You've worked your ass off, and you should feel good about yourself. You really should. So well done to you for that. And thanks for that question. Interesting one. A nice little trip down memory lane there of me and Luce both pretending, hey, the struggle's real out here, guys. And the struggle is real. The struggle is real. Just because Luce is a big time now media
mogul.
What's the word? Mogul. He's a media mogul. He's got the Gas Digital Studios in New York. He's branching out into other studios in LA. I mean, the man's taking over the world. I, on the other side, on the flip side, I'm diminishing. Okay, I'm diminishing. I'm going to be asking you for a job soon, Luce. Okay, so just remember this charity version that you have of yourself right now. When I come to you with my cap in hand saying, Luce, please, sir, give me more. Give me more. Remember this time, okay? What else we got?
Let's go. One more question, and then we have a nice little piece of content that we'll end the show with. What do we got here?
This is Matt Jabone.
Matt Jabone.
You know, there's something that a lot of people don't know about Dan Hooker, and that's that he fought once before at heavyweight. However, usually when people change weight classes, it's usually either up a weight class or down a weight class. But with Dan Hooker, he went all the way down to lightweight, which is like four weight classes below him.
Yeah.
Do you think the reason why he moved all the way down to lightweight is because of John Jones's history of beating hookers? Thank you.
Oh God! I was like, this guy's an idiot. I'm like, he was obviously a fat bastard back in the day. Do you know what I mean? He was a fat bastard, so he fought at heavyweight, started training, and he lost weight, and then now he fights at lightweight, which is his natural weight class. Although I don't know how he makes it, but it was a good joke at the end. It paid off, my friend. I like it.
It was worth the wait. All right. One more little piece of content here. Who is this? He wrote his own very own BYM rap, and I appreciate a solid rap. DJ Mikey B appreciates a solid rap. So we'll wrap the show with this.
We'll wrap the show with a rap as long as it ain't crap. If it is, I'll take a nap, and Luce, you will get a slap. Without further ado, roll the tape. That's right, Luce. Rattlesnake, what's going on? I just can't stop. Oh my God, my brain's gonna pop. Roll the tape. Let's go, motherfucker. Let's go with the flow.
I just want to break it down for everybody and kick this beat like DJ Mikey B. Here's what I want to look at the most. Who is the greatest podcast host? If you think the answer may be Luce, well, look at how he destroys a fine British roast. And I know that grasses get molasses, but I'd rather have Michael's eyes than Luce's glasses.
Oh,
I mean, come on, Luce. In there, it's not sunny. At least that you always come off funny. Bisping, you may have beat awkward Luke Rocks, but can you take Mighty Luce in a round of slap box? Maybe one bite is all Mike can take from the Puerto Rican rattlesnake.
Rattlesnake.
Wait.
Oh. We're buffering.
Luce like a book with just one shot from Larry's left hook. Always love you guys, good old banter. Podcast coming in like gifts from Santa. Fighter and the kid, you've totally been outdone. Seriously though, you guys are number one. And only one thing certain by comparison, they both beat the brakes off Harrington.
Harrington.
Beat the brakes off the Harrington. Who said that?
The fact that a mentally handicapped person was able to even get together that many sentences in a row, I commend them.
What was the one that he said? He said something was British roast. It just didn't rhyme at all. Did he say Luce and then it roast. Was roast?
Yeah,
Luce and roast do not rhyme.
No.
Even one time. Whether upfront or sublime.
Words that rhyme with Luce, Dewis, Jewish. I gotta do this.
Don't bring the Jewish into this. It is just simply I rap this. That was terrible. Hey, we like it. Listen, I like it. Maybe you can write some lyrics, but you certainly can't deliver them. Nice heart, nice video. Very, very sweet. I like it. It was good. It brought a smile to our faces. Luce, how do you grade this on a scale of 1 to 10?
I give it a 6 out of 10 just for pure passion. You know, the execution was a little off. The audio was off. Video was off. Beat was off. Not everything rhymed, but you could tell that this guy really spent a good 2-3 days putting this together.
Well, That was Dean Parnell at Dean P 0404, and he is a media production graduate.
Wow. Hire him. Hire him if you're out there. If you're looking for a media production guy, he's your guy.
I need a studio. I need a studio producer. I need somebody to help me turn on the computer, according to Luis J. Gomez. Maybe someone to stop this bright light that's now shining on me, because sometimes it's bright, sometimes it's dark. Now it's bright. It's overexposed.
I also like how you characterized Brian's job as just turning on a computer. Every time you say that, I watch Brian die a little bit more inside.
Listen, I don't have an extensive network here. I don't have a studio. I have a computer. There's a button. Hold on. Look at that. My finger's on the button. I could push the button right now with this movement. Ding. It's like, it's not even a finger. It's just a push of a button and the computer comes on. Then I log into Chrome and then that's it. Away we go. I do not need a producer.
Technically, if we want to set up another camera, a separate audio source, having a producer put that all together, edit it all out, then link up with Brian and do all of that work, that's why we would have a producer.
If I could swing this camera around now and show you what the rest of this room looks like. In fact, I'm going to do it. Get ready. There's a lot of shit in here. And I'm cleaning it all out this week, and I'm turning it into a podcast extraordinaire, studio, suite, apartment, state of the art. Bow, 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 bow. And if you want to get a producer up here, Lewis, feel free. If anybody wants to apply for the job in the Anaheim Hills area, hit me up. Come on down. You know, come over to the house. I'll make you a coffee and you turn on the computer for me. That's all you got to do.
It's pretty easy.
I'm an intern, but believe you me.
Harrington wants to come live there. No, Harrington, you cannot go live in Bisping's fucking half mansion. Actually, what about in Callum's room? When Callum comes home, you have to leave, Harrington. You got to go live in the pool. But when Callum's not in town, I mean, technically, Harrington can just sleep in his bed.
I'm getting an infrared sauna for out the back by the pool. So Harrington could sleep in the sauna. When Callum comes back, that's fine. Harrington goes into the sauna. Maybe he'll lose a few pounds while he's in there.
It's a good idea. I like it. All right. Thank you so much for watching today's episode. There's a good chance we're going to be back later in the week. We're going to try to make it work. Either way, thanks for supporting the show. Go share it with a friend. Send this episode out to one of your best friends right now and let them know about the number one MMA comedy podcast in the world. Believe you me.
Don't send this one. If you want to send one, send the last one. I thought the last one was better, but this was a good one. It was all
right.
Why
do you do that every time? Stop. It was a great show.
If I was going to say send an episode of the podcast, I wouldn't say this one. This is the most current, but it's not the best. It's not the flagship episode.
I'll say right now, I'll say with 100% certainty that I consider this one of the best episodes that we've ever done. We get better each time we do the show. We are better today than we were 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, send this one.
I have a cloudy mind. I have a headache, okay? When I'm back, we're doing a second show this week, because the second show this week will be the best episode of Believe You Me you've ever seen. I'm going to start planning it the moment I push this button. I have a button that I also push, and it turns the computer off. It's the same button that you use to turn. Same button! It's crazy! Fucking producer dog, fuck all around here.
Harrington, you got to learn one button.
One finger is all you need to do that job. Do you have the finger? Do you have the skill?
Harrington would still fuck it up. I'm telling you right now, he would somehow miss the button.
No.
He would put his finger right through your fucking forehead.
It's not turning on, Mike.
Harrington, that's the microphone. What are you doing? I said, turn on the computer. Hey, I will tell you this, though. I will tell you this. A little secret one. Look. If you turn this microphone around, you see the blue light. See the blue light?
Yeah.
Recently, that's a switch to the microphone. When I do this.
Sounds better.
And now you can hear me because I've turned it back on. And Brian was freaking out. He's like, Mike, I don't hear you. I'm like, oh, what the fuck? What's going on? And then secretly I noticed the button on the microphone was off.
You never said anything? Was that today?
I didn't say a fucking word. No, it wasn't today. It was a couple of weeks ago. I'm not saying that. I am not giving them the chance to talk shit at me. So I'm like, I don't know what happened. I guess you figured it out, Brian. What the fuck?
The only times that's happened where we're like, we haven't changed anything, Mike. And then he calls back in and then he's all of a sudden working.
No, no, no. Now, that's the one time. The one time there's clickety-click clicks at your end, multiple buttons being pushed by multiple fingers of multiple people. It's a lot of fingers. 30 fingers of multiple people is a lot of fingers, a lot of buttons to be pushed.
All right,
on that note,
we're going.
On the button push. We're out. We're gone. Take care. Bye-bye.